In today's world, we are increasingly dependent on technology. Our business and personal lives rely on it, but as you've probably noticed, it's unreliable. They promise it'll get better, but it usually gets worse. Our computers are slow, so we end up squinting at smartphones and tablets. We live in constant fear that something's going to happen to our personal data, so we're scared into paying for fake protection that proves useless when disaster strikes. Update attacks, fake Wi-Fi, cloud control, and other industry scandals are designed to keep the money flowing. The jokers we pay to fix our stuff have no clue what they're doing, so they do a virus scan and then wipe out our precious photos. Intelligent, successful people feel intimidated by the chaos and think it's somehow their fault. If they only knew what the industry was doing to them, they'd get torches and pitchforks. If only we had someone to explain it all in plain English so we can start protecting ourselves. Oh wait, we do! It's the Computer Exorcist Podcast with your host, Mark Anthony Arena.
From the Wallace Memorial Microphone in my home office, overlooking the can of worms in downtown Rochester, New York, this is the Computer Exorcist Podcast. My name is Mark Anthony Arena. I am so glad you have joined us here for our second half of our discussion with superhero Aaron Welty. And I will ask you later on about all that. But go ahead and tell us about your experience on Capitol Hill. Just fascinating, I'm sure.
So when I was in middle school, in junior high, I was in seventh grade. I was taking a class on the U.S. presidents, mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed it. And I had a couple of friends at school who came to me and said to me, "Hey, Welty, you know, maybe you could be president someday, you know, of the United States." And I thought, well, okay, you know, why not? You know, what did we know? We were 13 years old. Well, and, you know, and you could go to Washington and get involved in politics. And I said, okay. And so that was kind of the beginning of, these two friends kind of, you know, speaking into my life and saying, hey, you know, you could do this. And so, it took about a decade, right? I didn't move to DC until I was 23 and out of college, but, you know, studied like public policy and public administration as an undergrad in college at Cedarville. And
by the way, if you went to college in Ohio, you got to hear my other podcast that I do called Flyover Plates. One of my buddies escaped Rochester and became immediately successful and went to Ohio. And so we compare the two places. So you got to hear it.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, transition to DC, you know, the fall of 2005 and, was an intern, you know, at a think tank for a while. And that's where I met Wallace. We were not only were we in the same internship program, but we were roommates, we were roommates for about 3 or 4 months, and that's where we met. And you know, that's when you know, one of the first movies we ever went to, because there used to be a movie theater not too far from where we were living at the time. He took me to see Serenity, right?
And he's like, "Oh, the Firefly movie."
The Firefly movie. Oh. That's right. He took me to see Serenity, and I was like, "Wallace." Like, "Ian, this is amazing. Like, what do I do?
What do I do?"
He's like, "Well, Welty, there's more."
Hadn't seen the TV series beforehand.
I hadn't seen all of it. Like, I'd seen bits and pieces, like, kind of randomly in college, and I didn't have context for them. And so this was on a Friday night. So the next day on Saturday, he pulls out his DVD set for Firefly, and we spent the entire Saturday watching the whole thing.
I knew you were going to say that. It's like, oh, we watched the entire thing in a day.
We watched the entire thing in a day. when we were done, I said, Wallace, what now? He's like, now there is no more. Yeah.
It like sounds like Obi-Wan Kenobi or something. There is no more.
There is no more. And I have secretly hated Fox Television ever since. Because they canceled it, right?
Yeah, I remember showing that. I'm pretty sure he got me into it as well. And I remember showing that. I had a projector in my first apartment after college. And everyone loved it. Like, yes. All my friends, some were sci-fi people, others were not. You know, the guys, the girls, everyone loved that show because of the characters.
Right. Because the characters, right? You had this like space western found family thing going on. And the fascinating thing kind of behind the scenes is, this was a brainchild of Joss Whedon, who also did Buffy and Angel. And mm-hmm. he was doing Buffy, Angel, and Firefly all at the same time.
Wow. I wish he had put more effort into Firefly, but yeah.
Well, right. I mean, Buffy was ending and, Angel was within like a season or two of ending and Firefly, happened and all of that. But, coming to DC that fall, that's when I, met Wallace and we got to be friends. And, within a few months I transitioned to, Capitol Hill and ended up being on Capitol Hill, for 7 years, kind of working for my home district. And that was, that was quite an experience. There were some wonderful, high points, getting to do some good and meet some really neat people and, speak some good things into the life of people that I would meet. And I helped hire and train a lot of, folks who were interns. And the thing about being on Capitol Hill as an intern, I mean, you were the absolute like bottom of the barrel. Like, if you want to talk about like the political version of the least of these, like that's what an intern is.
And I interviewed a Capitol Hill intern on an episode recently, and you got to hear it. I'll introduce you to him. That's so cool.
Yeah. And so
you're a bottom barrel.
Right. You're bottom of the barrel. And so I took this very seriously. Mm-hmm. In terms of like hiring folks and training them and stuff and investing in their life, because I knew that a lot of these folks, they would go on to other offices and they would get permanent jobs. And that's how you would have kind of connections and ins to other offices mm-hmm. to get things done.
And you never know how you can help someone else out later on in a future life, so to speak.
That's correct. And so, but part of it for me was, just seeing the importance of investing in these younger folks and having some influence on who they were becoming as people.
Whoa. Right? And I talk about this in the book in the last episode we talked about this with someone is being the world to someone, right? Even if you personally can't change the world, right? And we're not
right.
You're not called to, but you could be the world to those few handful of interns who worked for you, right?
Exactly. And it's funny because my, sometimes when I go speak places, people ask me about, being into superheroes and stuff and wanting to change the world and all this. And I tell them, wait a minute. I'm not interested in, I'm not interested in saving the world. And they're like, what do you mean you're not like you love all these heroic characters and superheroes and stuff? I said, I'm not interested in saving the world, because from a religious perspective, when we talk about the gospel, I believe Jesus already did that.
Yeah, that's already been done. Yeah, right? and this
it's already been done.
Right, because I work in the most corrupt industry in the universe, and this is something I struggle with, because I have the answers, I want to save my industry, I want to save the world, but it's okay, Mark, and this is something I write about in my next book, is, all right, Mark, you got to figure out how to just do what you can, and not have to save the world, yeah.
And so instead of wanting to save the world, my focus is wanting to save someone's world.
Yep.
One person, one encounter, one conversation, and in my case, one geek reference at a time.
But that's what Wallace did for us, by the way.
Right.
Is yeah, I mean, a small like, handful of friends that, but he really taught us so much. I mean, everything he taught me about technology, I end up using now.
Well, and for me with Wallace, it was more of a, hey, I came from a place in, you know, particularly high school and growing up where there were four of us that were really close and we were all nerds together, right?
Me too.
We thought we were the only like Star Wars nerds in the galaxy.
Okay? In the galaxy. But then it turns out, right? Like, wait a minute. And actually, like, some of our friends thought that he went to high school with me because we were so similar, even though we went to high school thousands of miles apart. Yeah.
And so, you know, I get out of college and I meet Wallace and it's like, okay, I get to DC and it's like, okay, I have another nerd friend. Like, somebody I can be my nerdy self around, and this is safe and it's okay. And he's going to encourage this and he's going to grow it. And, you know, he's the one that got me into, you know, ultimately got me into Firefly. He got me into Buffy and Angel, and he got me into Joss Whedon, right? Which made it a lot easier when Joss Whedon started doing Avengers movies and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, it made it easier for me. Like, he and I already, before we met, we were already jazz guys, and we had Marantz stereos, and we were into PCs, and you name it, right? And it's like, oh, wow. But yeah, we'd get each other into other crazy stuff, too, that it's like, hey, here's some other nerd stuff you haven't heard about yet.
Because when C.S. Lewis talks about friendship, right, he talks about the idea of friendship in a book that he wrote called The Four Loves. And when he talks about friendship, one of the things he says is that a lot of time when we connect with people and we make friends, it's because we have this thing that we love. And all of a sudden we find this other person and it's like, wait a minute, you too? Like, it's not just me. There's somebody else. Right. That's how he got into, that's how Lewis as a kid got into his interest in like ancient mythologies and stuff.
That joy of discovering that, wow, right, you that, love that, that too.
Right. That journey and the joy of discovery. And like, that's how, you know, Lewis met his lifelong best friend. And, you know, because they were both into, you know, they stumbled into mythology together. And like, that's ultimately how C.S. Lewis met J.R.R. Tolkien. Because they were hardcore original Norse mythology fanboys, and there was a group of guys at Oxford who met together to talk about their love for Norse mythology, and eventually that morphed into what became the Inklings, right? Their literary group that would meet together. So like it
I like the name
for Wallace and I never really thought about it until today. Like all the way back then, almost 20 years ago, was sort of like the like super like pop culture nerd versions of Tolkien and Lewis meeting, you know, but in our case we met at a think tank instead of a university.
Well, you were like Superman and Batman or whatever, you know, meeting
kind
right?
of
the two heroes
know,
meeting
kinda,
wow.
right kind of and you know that the thing, I mean, I walked through a lot of interesting things in the time that I, you know, was on Capitol Hill, but the story that I always tell is there was an intern that I hired, probably 2011 or so. And at the time, I was trying to transition to bigger and better things, either in the office I was working for or in another office that I was trying to get a legislative director position in. In neither case, you know, did this work out for me the way I wanted it to. But what happened next was I hired this, you know, young lady to intern for our office, and her name was Ashley. And I quickly discovered three things about Ashley. Is that she, you know, loved Marvel superheroes like I do. she loved the Legend of Zelda video games like I do.
Oh, me too. And you she... love that too?
Oh, yeah.
We got to talk about this later, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so, but she also had her own medical challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember, as I got to know her, I remember thinking there was one night and I was having a, you know, I was praying and having a conversation with God about this. And I was really wrestling with, hey, I want to move up, right? I want to move up in the occupational world. I want to get to the next thing.
That's me. Like,
why is this not happening?
Mm-hmm. How many times have I had that conversation? Right. Oh.
And the response I got was life-changing.
Mm.
The response I got was, Aaron, if you had moved on to this other office like you desperately wanted to do to go help this brand new congressional office kind of form and forge, if you had done that, you would not have been there to hire this girl.
Hmm. You were the world to someone.
Right. And I would not have been there to hire her. And most of the conversations that we had while she was an intern had nothing to do with politics, policy, power, or promotion.
Mm-hmm.
They had everything mm-hmm. to do with, you know, wisdom and courage and learning how to live well, you know, live rightly and live well in the midst of having the challenges that we have. And that was, gosh, that was probably 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I, you know, she's married now. She lives in Ohio. And she and I are still friends, you know, 13 years later. And like she and her husband have come out a time or two to visit me, like since they graduated college and moved to Ohio. I was actually supposed to crash her 30th birthday in like Labor Day weekend of 2020, but COVID, right?
Remind so me to like tell that, you some stories about how Wallace and I crashed some people's houses like in totally, you know, different cities who didn't expect us. And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Crashing parties.
Like she knew I'd been invited and I was going to come and stuff, but you know, COVID. And so it didn't happen. But, and so, you know, I'm having this conversation with God about this, and God basically says, hey, you needed to be there to hire her and to mentor her and to do those things. And I said, God, are you really willing to arrest and the development of my like political and occupational future for the sake of, you know, the public policy version of the least of these for a college intern?
Yeah.
And God says, yes, I am.
Absolutely. And I can relate. When I was doing my job, I was in the depths of the extreme stressful period of my life, and I was so stressed out, and the calls just kept coming in 24 hours a day. And my grandma called one night, and I said, I don't have time to talk. And she said, hang on, honey, I just want to tell you something. These people need you. I know you're stressed, I know you're this and that, but you're doing a work of mercy for these people. These people need you. You tell me all the time how you save them from scammers trying to ask them for tens of thousands of dollars. And she said, I know you want to be elsewhere, but these people need you, and you're meant to be here right now. So that, I'll never forget that. I want to ask you some more questions so we can, you ready for more?
Yeah, let's go for
all
it.
Right. Tell me about, Aaron wrote a couple articles for the C.S. Lewis Institute. That's cslewisinstitute.org, and you can look him up there. One of the things, he was on one of their podcasts, too, talking about this thing that he calls the heroics of weakness. And I want to ask you about so many things. But first, the description on their podcast says that you talked about how God has provided an unexpected prescription showing that perseverance is the unexpected and greater miracle. And I guess I should ask you to explain that story first about the kids laying the hands on you, to explain what that means. Because that, to me, that hit home for me.
So the root of that goes back about 20 plus years to college. I was a sophomore at Cedarville in Ohio, and my time at Cedarville was very challenging. It was challenging academically, but it was also challenging spiritually, and it was particularly challenging physically because of the cerebral palsy and kind of the level at which I had to level myself up to handle college and how my body often responded to that level of output and stress with arthritic pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so here I am, it's like, you know, I'm 20 years old. It's winter of my sophomore year. And there were some nights where I was just bent over a chair, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, just begging God, I really need you to take this away.
Mm-hmm.
I really need you to heal me of all of this and take away the cerebral palsy and all of that. And
I've been in my own tiny way, right? Like, please, you know, get me out of this situation. I'm so overwhelmed with work and whatever it may. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know,
asking for immediate relief.
Right. And we're asking for immediate relief, and God kind of pulled a, you know, a Dr. Alan Grant from Jurassic Park and said, that's not what I'm going to do.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, well, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to prescribe perseverance for you instead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, you know, that's what I did for Paul, right? In 2 Corinthians 12, when he's talking about his own thorn in the flesh. Because, I mean, Paul asked for it to be taken away, and God said no. And so he said, I'm going to do for you what I did for Paul. I'm going to prescribe perseverance instead. We're going to make you stronger so that you can handle this better. Mm-hmm. And because what I actually wanted God to do is I wanted God to take this away. I wanted God to prescribe painlessness for me. I wanted him to, you know, wave his hand like a Jedi mind trick and everything went away.
Mm-hmm.
And God's like, no, we're not going to do that.
And I remember being in my next book, I talk about, you know, I was in this one crisis in 08 and I was in my doctor's office and I said, how come I'm not better yet? And he said, he goes, you young people, he goes, you want everything right. He goes, it takes patience. Right. He goes, don't, you know.
Because we live in a culture of like immediacy and an immediate expectation, right? I want what I want and I want it yesterday and I want it to be perfect.
With cable TV and then with the internet, right? And you take that expectation, I want it now and I want it yesterday and I want it perfect, and try lining that up to so many things in life where it doesn't line up. It's like you can't have the perfect spouse and you can't have the perfect job. And
We're losing the art of understanding and appreciating delayed gratification.
Yep.
And so this happens to me when I was 20.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 20 years of processing that, 20 years kind of living on the other side of that conversation at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. as a college sophomore. And the thing is, you know, things didn't get better. You know, they got worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my senior year as a student at Cedarville was particularly physically trying. You know, working on Capitol Hill was also physically trying because of the mm-hmm. stress, and the stress kind of working its way through your body as pain and things like that.
Oh, it does.
Right? And so in the aftermath of all of that, like I said, you know, 9 years ago, I was in Israel with my dad and a group of friends. And on one of our last days in country, we were in Jerusalem and we were in the old city. And my dad had gone off to buy a shirt for my brother. And this group of very exuberant college kids found me in the old city, and the next thing I know, I'm surrounded by this group of college kids who ask if they can pray for me. And I had an inkling of where this might be going.
Mm-hmm.
But I said yes. And so they started praying for me and, you know, praying for healing in different parts of my body. And you know, they had their hands on me and they were praying over me. And after a few minutes, They stopped again, and you know, they asked if I felt any different. And for the second time, I said no. But you know, in the intervening time frame, you know, God just said, "Hey, you know, let them know that they're trying to pray a degree of peace into your life through physical healing. They don't realize you already have that you've already fought for, right? Long before these kids ever met you, you know, as a college kid." And so I tried to tell them that.
Whoa. And that the inner healing is what we were going for. And I say that in my next book a little bit too, how everyone thinks you have to conquer the world outside of you, but in reality it had nothing to do with my business troubles and the business I was fighting with and whatever. It was, I needed to find inner peace, which I did not have.
Right. And so I try to tell them this, and they didn't want to hear that. Mm. And like they kind of dispersed and disappeared, and I didn't really see them again.
So
what was interesting to me
was the perseverance, correct?
Exactly. Huh. Exactly. The real miracle was the perseverance. The real miracle was something that, like, they wanted to see a miracle that day.
An external miracle.
Yes, they wanted to see an external miracle that they could say that they were a part of, that they could take at least some degree of credit for.
And on a large level, and I've been meditating on this for the past couple of years, is when Jesus came here, everyone was looking for the external healing, right? But what he was trying to do was fundamentally transform the way we treat people.
What they were looking for was a militaristic messiah to overthrow Rome.
Right, which, guess what? That would have just, it would have been back and forth, more antagonizing, and it would have been what I call squeezing the balloon. You know, when you squeeze a water balloon, it just goes to the other side, right?
Right. Even when you look at one of the last conversations that Jesus has early in the book of Acts, right, the disciples ask him, okay, you're back, you're resurrected, you're here now, you came back from death. Is now when you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel? Is now when you're going to free us from political and military oppression and overthrow Rome? And what does Jesus say? He says, nope, I'm going to leave, and you're going to be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, fundamental inner healing. And still, to this day, plenty of people have wars about religion because they want the external victory, but that's an ephemeral victory.
And so, you know, and part of this gets to, you know, some of the talking about the heroics of weakness, right? Because when I talk about this idea of weakness being heroic, one of the characters I talk about is Tony Stark. I talk about Iron Man, and I talk about his understanding of this idea of terrible privilege, right? That this terrible, awful, horrible thing happened to him. He's got this heart condition, right? He was almost killed by terrorists, and he gets kidnapped and by them, and he's mistreated by them. This horrible thing happens to him.
Side note, I was introduced to the Iron Man and the Tony Stark because Wallace dragged me to a cigar club, and it was on TV at the time, so that was my first...
I actually was with Wallace opening night in May of 2008 when we went to go see it.
Movie.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Opening. Yeah.
Like,
so,
like,
okay.
one of our things, you know, up until he passed away, was we went and saw pretty much every Marvel movie together.
Wow. I don't have the attention span to watch a Marvel movie, but if I was in a cigar club, okay, and it's on in the background. Anyway,
sure.
go on.
Sure.
So he has this terrible...
So he has this terrible thing that happens to him because of the terrorists and him being captured and all of that. But in the Avengers movie, he talks about it as terrible privilege, right? And what I think he's getting at is that this thing that happened to me that was terrible, it's awful, mm-hmm. but it's also a privilege because through that, as a result of that experience, that's what led me to become Iron Man. And that's how I do good in the world as a superhero is Iron Man.
I can completely identify with that because I've had, again, horrible things happen to me as an adult in my 30s, but it gave me this superpower where I'm not afraid of anything anymore, so to speak, right? Where I can...
There you go.
Yeah, and I'm out. I know that my mission is to do things. Yeah.
And what's interesting is that... So this happens to Tony, right? And he's talking about this idea of terrible privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And when... So Wallace was with me in May of 2012, opening night for Avengers. That's the first time I ever heard Tony say those words and talk about this, because he's having a conversation with Bruce Banner in the lab on the SHIELD helicarrier, and they're talking about this. Wallace was right next to me when this is happening, and the light's going on in my head, and I'm like, okay, Joss Whedon, is, whether he realizes it or not, he is giving you language that you can use to help share your story and your understanding of the world with other people. I interpreted that as, I can take this language, I understand this language, I can use this language.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's what you garnered from it.
And it's what I took from it, you know, among other things. So Tony goes through this situation and comes out the other side, and he understands that there's this terrible privilege in his life. Well, I talk about my terrible privilege as cerebral palsy, right? And I talk about some of the things, you know, you and I had talked about earlier. I talk about, you know, almost dying as a 14-year-old in the hospital as a result of, you know, recovery from a surgery gone wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when, you know, when we're talking about kind of the finiteness of life earlier, that is kind of when it hit me. I was 14 years old. It was Christmas time. I walked into the bathroom one day, looked at myself in the mirror, and it looked like death was looking back at me, wearing my face, because my digestive system is shut down as a result of some things related to the surgery. I was wasting away. Like, if you could imagine like a cross between the Borg from Star Trek and Skeletor, that's what I looked like.
Wow.
As a 14-year-old. And I was like, okay, this is serious. Like, I might not make it out of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thanks be to God that I did. Right. And that was a whole kind of experience for me, and walking through all of that as a young kid. So like the finiteness of life that we normally don't get hit with until we get much older. Like, I got hit with that as a middle school kid.
That's right. Right. And I got hit with that in my mid 30s, and I hang out with people in their 60s, and they tell me, like, I told a couple guys, I said, you know, I haven't gotten to this, this, and this yet. And they go to me, they said, you know what, Mark, you're actually ahead of where I am, and I'm in my 60s or 70s. Because like, we're still, most people in this age, we're still trying to figure it out. In the last couple of minutes here, tell me about your superhero alter ego. I love how you put that, how it's just such an inspirational thing for yourself. That,
yes. So about a decade ago, I was here in DC, and I was having a conversation with a really good friend of mine. I was in the middle of recovering from kidney stone extraction surgery. He came over. We're sitting in the living room, and I started talking about Tony Stark versus Iron Man, and how the world at large, they see Iron Man, right? They see this superhero character.
And for folks who aren't familiar with that, think about Clark Kent versus Superman, right?
Right. But most people don't see Tony Stark. And what I mean by that is, in Iron Man 3, Tony Stark is clearly dealing with PTSD as a result of the events of the Battle of New York and Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that really get to see him struggle with that are people like Pepper Potts, Rhodey, and Happy Hogan.
The people who see Tony outside of the suit.
That's right. You see Tony without the suit, right? There's that whole conversation between Tony and Steve Rogers in Avengers about what are you without the suit? And the whole point of Iron Man 3 is showing who and what Tony is without the suit.
Last week's episode that I did with Taylor Abrahams, I talked about how it's kind of like entering a dojo, right? I have no keys. I have no wallet. I have none of that. It's just me, stripped of all the trappings of life.
There is pain in this dojo.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's but I love that. It's a way, especially, you know, it's a way for me to get away from the world, you know, being sick of myself for a while and just getting away
and
from
you,
that.
You see this dichotomy between Tony and Iron Man, right? And so I'm talking to my buddy Andy about this and talking about how, like, my life is kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's the part of me, what I call the wealthy part of me that everybody sees, the part of me that, you know, is a superhero and Star Wars loving geek who has a 10-year-old inner child that I've named Linus. And like, that's the part of me that I really love to be, right? And I'm really good at that and I really enjoy that. But then there's the Aaron part of me that has to deal with the cerebral palsy and a lot of the difficulties surrounding that. And so I had this conversation with my buddy Andy, and he was really touched by it. And around that time, you know, we had a whole experience where I had to go to the ER one night, and he took me and he was there with me the whole night. And as we were driving back to my apartment the next morning, he just said, you know, like, I got to see what it's like to be the Aaron part of you, because I just experienced what it's like for you in the hospital, and nobody gets to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Andy takes all of this, and for Christmas that year, he got a bunch of my friends together and they all pitched in. He had some comic book cover illustrations made that are framed. One is Aaron. It's like a comic book cover of me, and it says Aaron on the top, and it's me in a suit. I kind of look like Phil Coulson from the Marvel movies, right? And with my scooter and the Capitals in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to symbolize like the Aaron part of me. But then
day
there's
job
the
guy.
Mm-hmm. Right, the day Clark job Kent. Guy, the Clark Kent piece. And then there's the Welty illustration that's me in my own like custom superhero suit, and I have a lightsaber, and you know, there's a Death Star and TIE Fighters in the background, and I'm hanging out with the X-Men and all this stuff. And so
all the stuff of all the dreams of all the shows,
right,
all together.
All the stuff.
Oh, like, I love it. I'm trying to, yeah.
You know, and the Phoenix is in there. The Phoenix is the kind of the custom scooter rocket car that my dad built for me that looks like a cross between, you know, an X-Wing from Star Wars and a light cycle from Tron.
Wow.
And so, like, that's all in there. And so he had these made into, you know, these custom pieces of framed art, and they're hanging up on my wall. And so when I talk about this idea of the heroics of weakness with folks, like, as part of the presentation, I actually have those two pieces of art up on the screen, and I talk about them and I explain them to the audience. And when you're talking about this idea of weakness being heroic and terrible privilege, you know, my point is that everybody's got one, right? Everybody has some sort of terrible privilege in their life. Everybody's got something where, like, they wish they didn't have it. They wish it wasn't part of their life. They wish, you know, maybe they wish God would take it away, like I did the cerebral palsy. And the answer is, no, this is the space from which you're supposed to do good in the world.
This is your calling. This is what only you can do.
Correct.
Whoa. And right? I'm trying to, as you're talking, I'm trying to imagine what I would do if someone made me a superhero comic book. It would be like me with, I don't know, a lightsaber, but maybe my air fryer, because that's how I cook all my food. and like Duke Leto from Dune. And Emeril,
okay, yeah, yeah.
And Emeril Lagasse and Jerry Seinfeld and Phil Collins.
You know?
yeah,
man, it's... And so, like, that's really the core of what it is, that we live in a culture that is obsessed with strength and success. And what if... You know, what if the truth is actually that, no, there's a point to the weakness, because the obstacle is the way.
But that gives you the strength, right? Those trials are what give you the strength.
Yes. And yeah. I have a mentor of 25 years who I actually met at camp as a teenager at the leadership camp that we were talking about earlier. And one of the things that he has shared with me that sometimes he would preach on is that one of the kind of benefits and after effects of pain is that pain provides a platform, right? When you, when you have walked through and handled or continue to handle well a painful experience, you have something to say to someone else. You have something to share with someone else. Because the reality is, like, when we look at these characters in some of these stories that would, that I love, right? These characters, these heroes and these villains, they start out the story in the same place. They start out the story as a victim of some sort. They start out the story.
And how are somebody, you going to deal with it? Are you going to go home and lick your wounds? Like, are you going to do, wow.
How are you going to deal with it? They start the story as a victim. They've experienced some sort of loss or grief or terrible disappointment or pain. And what they do with that pain, how they handle their pain, how they navigate their pain determines their trajectory.
Right, okay. And society wants you to feel bad about yourself. And side note, you just gave me a humongous idea I got to throw in there is, you know, like you said earlier, how C.S. Lewis said, you know, the joy of discovering a mutual interest, right? Hey, do you like that show too, whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
I just realized that also when someone talks about their pain, I can say, you know what? Hey, I went through something similarly bad. So it's that same thing of, you know what, we're going to bond because of whatever, of the pain that we went through, right? It's, hey, you know what, I understand you.
Yes. And you can do that, and you should do that when the time is right.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Right, when the time is right. So these characters, right, that go through these things, they either become a villain or they become a hero. And what happens is heroes harness their hurt to help others heal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Heroes harness their hurt to help others heal, while villains weaponize their wounds to create more victims like themselves.
Right? Whoa.
Villains weaponize their wounds to create more victims like themselves. Because villains are victims empowered by pain. Villains are victims empowered by pain. Huh. You see this with Darth Vader. You see this with Voldemort and Harry Potter. Wow. All kinds of villainous characters. You see this with Magneto and the X-Men. I mean, he's a great example.
Wait, that all brings... Because at the end of my next book, I talk about how I was just waking up from it and healing from it, and I was taking a walk with my brother, and what was the first thing out of my mouth? He said, Mark, you something changed. And I said, I'm angry because other people have gone through this too, and I need to help them, and I need to write a book about this. And that was... Whoa. Yeah.
And so
you're saying I picked the right path.
So villains are victims empowered by pain, but heroes, they have found hope through healing or healing through hope. Like both of those work, right?
Wow.
And this is how these stories that we love, these heroes' journey stories, this is how they're structured. This is part of why they're structured that way.
Okay, that's a perfect way to wrap this up. That's a perfect way to summarize. That's incredible. Like that, I mean, I've heard your talk and everything, but that part right there, wow. Yeah. That just hit home for me. In the about 1 minute left, tell me, so you now give talks to leadership camps and you have a speaking tour, is that right?
I do a little bit of both. So there's a camp in northern Michigan, up near Traverse City called Lake Ann Camp, and every summer they do 2 weeks of a special leadership camp that's essentially invite only. You have to be chosen for this, you have to be vetted for it. And I like to describe it as summer camp meets Top Gun. Because you're either eating, sleeping, you're in the classroom, where we do a lot of our, our teaching and stuff, where I you know, teach about the heroics of weakness and pursuing heroic ending. And I talk about all these superheroes and stuff. And so if you're not eating, sleeping, or, you know, in the classroom, you're out doing things like playing paintball, or you're out doing high adventure kind of things, you know, climbing towers, high ropes, all that kind of stuff.
Climbing mountains.
we're not quite there yet. Yeah. But I mean, for some of these students, it feels like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because, you know, we're trying to get them out of their comfort zone and kind of, you know, call out their leadership capacity and help, you know, form and forge those things. But I love it. I mean, it's the best 2 weeks of my summer. I prep all year for it. I train physically as best I can all year so that I can keep up with a bunch of high-performing high school kids. And it's fun because a lot of these kids, they'll graduate. They'll go through the program. They'll graduate from high school. They'll go to college. They'll come back in the summers in college and work on summer staff. And everybody expects me to be there those 2 weeks. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh, like, that camp is coming up. Wealthy's going to be there up at camp. Everybody calls me Yoda. So like, that's my nickname at camp. It's crazy that like all of these high school and college kids, they expect me to show up every year.
And where can people find you on the web if they want to see where you're speaking next or hear your past talks?
Best place will be my website. That's aaronrwelty.com. That's aaronrwelty, WELTY.com. It's the best way to get a hold of me. And I've got a demo video there so people can get a sense of kind of how I talk and what I speak about and if they're interested in having me come speak to their audience.
AaronRWelty.com. Thank you so very much for being here. I knew it would be an amazing conversation, and I think it turned out that way, huh?
I hope so.
Yeah. You can find me at TheComputerExorcist.com. Buy my book for everyone you know. It talks about the IT industry and all of its absolute lack of ethics, dearth of ethics, as I say, all in plain English, and it's called How to Protect Yourself from Your Computer. Thanks so much, folks. Hope you loved it, and we'll talk to you next week. It's all right now.